if I may say, the spirit of how we function is written right in the handbook. Basically, the VA tells the underwriter to find a way to make it work.
Service members should get the most out of their VA benefits for homeownership. That's our belief, and that's why we're here. So whether you're looking to own your dream home, considering refinancing, or just exploring the VA home loan process, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Helping Heroes Become Homeowners.
Are you a veteran ready to purchase this spring? The market is starting to pick up. Today's existing home sales reported much higher than projected, so things are starting to pick back up for everybody. And what impact does the latest ruling have from NAR on our VA buyers and first-time home buyers? Hi, my name is Richard Sarri. I'm with Alliance Mortgage Group, and this is the latest episode of Helping Heroes Become Homeowners. Today, I have a really good friend, known him for a long time. We got about, 52 years of lending experience on today's podcast, if that makes us age out a little bit. I mean, we were taking paper apps, but this is Charles Vamadeva. He's the president, broker, CEO of Patriot Pacific Financial. How are we doing, hello, buddy?
Nice. Thank you. Thank you for the intro. You're too kind.
Absolutely. Yeah, we go way back at the paper app days. That was
Those were a long time ago. It took like 2 months to get anyone approved. Back in the 90s.
Everything was a manual paper underwrite almost, right?
Right.
Back in the day. Holy
big monitors that, you know, went back like 3 feet behind.
Yeah. Not a whole lot of automation back then for loan originators.
Right.
So I brought you on because, you know, the student has become the master when I think of you. Right. I brought you in, hired you, but when I look at what you've done, you have created a model to help veterans. And this is what this podcast is about, is getting the word about the truth about the VA home loan and really having veterans and active duty members understand what the benefit's all about. So I want you to kind of dive in. What's your passion? What brought you into this space for VA and helping veterans?
I'll be honest with you, Rich. It was, I want to say, you know, I crafted it and premeditated it, but it didn't happen that way. And I'll give you the short version. I'd been in the business 13 years before I began to kind of veer towards VA lending and veterans and helping veterans. And the way it happened, I'll tell you real quick. I had a veteran, an Army veteran who was a truck driver, apply for a VA loan. And I pulled up his credit, and five lenders had looked at his credit report before I had. And I'm like, oh my God, why am I going to waste my time? Clearly, this is not a doable deal, right?
Right.
So I'm number six. And I'm talking to this gentleman. I'm just going to make up a name so I don't put his real name out there. Let's call him Jim, right? And I asked him, I said, Jim, what's going on here? What happened? And he said, well, I have a unique way of how my income's derived because he's a truck driver. And he had his VA disability income or what have you. And none of those lenders had taken the time to really dissect that and, you know, understand it. And he was super frustrated because he felt like they weren't getting it. Well, long and short of it, I went to extra lengths to figure out how to properly document this income. It did look sporadic at the outset, presented it to an underwriter and argued the case. And by the way, there was some derogatory negative credit history as well. So this is not a super clean file.
Right.
And literally I found myself selling her and sort of like wooing her, you know, into a thumbs up. And we ended up funding that loan. This is in 2009, 2010. And he was just beside himself and went and told everybody. Everybody he knew, I mean, VFW and all these different groups. And I started getting a lot of VA business that way. And then I'll tell you, Richard, short version, I sort of discovered that by putting the picture together the right way, you could sway the decision maker. That's it. That's the be all of it, is how you present the veteran situation, arguing almost like an attorney, right? I'm like, wait a minute, that worked. She went for it. You know, it was gray. It wasn't black or white. And I turned the gray into a thumbs up.
But you know what? He came across somebody that was willing to go the extra mile. these other loan officers may just saw credit score and saw the difficulty of trying to prove income and didn't want to deal with it or whatever the case is, maybe not enough experience to put that presentation together. That's one thing that, you know, known you for so long and watching you post stuff. And when you have a situation on a hard deal like that, you'll explain it on what you did to get that loan approved. And I'm just blown away on some of the things that you've accomplished. And that's just, you know, you're good at what you do. And that goes a whole long way.
There's a distinction between creative thinking and fraudulent thinking.
Well, right? Absolutely.
We don't cross that line where now you're misrepresenting a veteran situation or being fraudulent. You know, that's, you don't want to go there, right? But you can push the envelope. You can stretch that, and it's still the truth. I'll give you another example, if you don't mind. Had a veteran, Navy veteran, a few years ago. I was the third person to look at the credit report and the file. He was already in escrow. And he worked for, I won't mention the city, but he worked for a city. Let's just call it City of Sacramento, right? And we needed the overtime. He works overtime. We needed the overtime to make the numbers work. And none of the underwriters that looked at it before were willing to give him the overtime income to help him qualify. And I'm sitting there looking at this thing at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, you know what? There's a pattern. Let's just call him John, right? I said, John, looking at this, it looks like you work overtime from January to June, and then you don't get it again until next January. I said, is that right? He's like, yeah, that's exactly what it does. I said, he said, no one's asked me that before. I said, well, I'm looking at this. I said, give me the last 4 years of pay stubs. He thought I was out of my mind. He's like, what? I said, yeah.
Well, most folks can't even get the last two, much less four.
He downloaded what he could, and he asked. He ended up getting me 4 years of pay stubs. And I built a pattern for the underwriter. I said, look, every so often when the fiscal year ends, they shut off the overtime. But guess what? It restarts again. And I said, we need to use it. When he got a letter from the supervisor where he worked and corroborated that, and boom, we ended up closing that deal. And he sold that house and made $300,000 profit. So, it's creative thinking. It's being willing to go outside the box, but keeping it kosher.
Absolutely. So, and like I said, your newer green loan officer may have some, you know, challenges on finding that, but you know, you said you're up at 1 o'clock in the morning trying to think of how to make a loan work for a veteran.
Yeah.
Most folks in our industry aren't doing that.
Yeah.
They're not. And that veteran appreciates for what you did, because like you said, you helped him get the equity that he sold on the property by getting him funded.
We're in the lending business, real estate professionals, lending professionals. We're all looking for the next deal. We're looking for the next client, right? We're spending money on Facebook advertising and this and that and the other. Hey, veterans are a very tightly knit group. And if you do a good job and you do the right thing and you act with integrity, they will tell everybody. They will. And that's a steady flow of referrals, right? Friends and family, because veterans are so closely knit, right? I'm just saying, you don't necessarily have to go chasing for cold business when potentially you could get a lot of business coming in regularly because you're doing a good job for a veteran.
Now, have you done anything differently since then that has increased that clientele? You doing anything differently now?
We do. We periodically hold classes, Rich. We'll rent a room at a restaurant. We'll get 30, 40, 50 people in there. We'll pay for the food and the beverages, and we'll teach the VA home loan benefit, because, you know, obviously that's one of the big gaps right now in the veteran's journey to home ownership, is just not knowing, you know, what it's about, how to go about it. What can I get, right? What are the rules? And so that's helped us get in front of more veterans. And it's astonishing the amount of misconceptions that you run across when you're talking to a group of, you know, military people, and the stuff that they've been told and they believe. And you're like, oh, my God, no, that's not true.
So are those misconceptions coming from their superior officers or from friends? I mean, where's that coming from?
Sometimes from those they look up to. I was in Okinawa, Japan, teaching a VA home loan class a few years ago, and a guy, he was serving in Guam Navy, and he came up to me, pulled me by the arm. He's like, big dude, he's like, hey, are you telling me And I'll never forget this. He said, are you telling me, this is after the class, he said, are you telling me that I could have bought a house at every duty station I went to? And I said, yeah, that's kind of what I'm telling you. And he said, well, my master chief told me that I should save my VA entitlement until I got out from my forever home. Now, this guy had been in for 15 years, and I didn't want to, you know, add to his wound, but I wanted to tell him, oh my God, how much equity did you forfeit by not buying homes over the last 50 years? So yeah, you're, I mean, misconceptions come from everywhere, even from superior officers, friends, family, other loan officers, real estate agents, bless their hearts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's the challenge, you know, here in Texas, is there's so much misconception even today, the classes that we've done and the things that we've, people that we've talked to, there's still so much misconception out there about this loan program. It's so, I'm it's extremely frustrating to the fact of, you want to talk to everybody and you want to clear the air, so to speak, on the truth about it, but you still have that one realtor from 5 years ago that had a bad experience with a VA home loan, and that's all they remember.
How are you dealing with that? I mean, you're helping vets out there. You're in Texas. You're doing great. How are you tackling that? Because it's an ongoing challenge, right? You've got an agent that's not looking fairly, not a level playing field at your veteran's home buying offer. How are you dealing with that?
So what I've started to do, I've started to put kind of like a letter together with my pre-approval letter. And I will reach out to the listing agent and I will have 10-15 minute conversation about that product and why that loan product is a better payment for my veteran. And it's a better opportunity to get into the home and express some of the misconceptions that they may have heard in the past and just have an open dialogue of try and get out of them what they've heard about the product and just try and give them a little bit of a sense of comfort that they can pass along to the seller.
That's good. That's good. That's really good.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. In the last handful that we've done, you know, the agents, you know, they're like, wow, I thought it was the other way. I didn't realize changes occurred on VA home loan about this particular situation. So I think all the listing agents really care about is the net to the seller going to be the same or less if they don't take the offer from VA? Do they take a conventional offer? So we've had some success with that, but it's still a challenge.
Would you say there's still a large need nationwide for professionals like you, me, real estate agents to get in front of veterans and teach? And there's still a need for that because of the misconceptions?
Absolutely. You know, I say that needs to always be the conversation because you do a side by side comparison of this loan product versus the other two or three they might be able to get into, it's always going to be a better payment.
Sure. Right.
It just is. And what I try and stress with the realtors too, that I'm teach is like, look, if we can get the veteran into the class or into the home using the benefit versus doing a different type of financing, when they want to refinance, that changes the whole dynamic for them. Because instead of it being a streamline, I don't have to requalify, I can do what I need to do on the VA Earl much easier. Now I got to qualify for a conventional refi or whatever. And it just makes that different. Now, if they want to use that benefit to do the refi, then we're talking about a cash out one or cash out two, right? So now that changes the dynamic. They still got to qualify. I mean, it's just, so just trying to understand and let them know that forward think after the fact for the veteran, how it would benefit them if we can take the offer.
How it would. Good to go. It sounds like you're in the trenches over there doing your thing, huh? Working your magic.
I don't know about that. However, if I had the Bama Diva hat,
you do great things.
I mean, it's amazing what you do.
We've fallen and failed as much as we've succeeded. There's been times that I've butt heads with an underwriter. I'm fighting and screaming and yelling, and she's not going to approve that loan. And we tell the veteran, hey, you know what? It's not happening right now. That's a tough thing to do. I will take on almost any case. I mean, there are some cases that clearly is not a situation where the veteran fell upon hard times and he or she could not make payments for a segment of time, right? Those are the cases that we take on and we want to fight for. there are some cases where it's clear this person just has not learned how to manage their finances, or they have no regard for credit. I run across that, just civilians and veterans. And you're probably not going to win that battle, right? You're probably not going to. And if you did bamboozle an underwriter to approve that loan, the chances are that veteran's going to get himself or herself in more trouble by not paying the mortgage on time, getting foreclosed on, and now you got a whole nother level of problems, right? So it is a fine line for us deciding who to take on, what case to take on and fight for. And if I may say, the spirit of how we function is written right in the handbook. Basically, the VA tells the underwriter to find a way to make it work, right?
Right.
It's right there, like find a way. And the VA goes on to say that if the underwriter justifies her reasoning and documents it, these are literally, I'm paraphrasing, the chances are VA staff will not contest that decision.
Right. See? They have the authority to approve, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think conventional or FHA has that special authority. You've got.
Yeah.
Some other things you got to make happen. So, right. I mean, VA does have that higher approval rate that we teach in the class versus conventional and FHA. So, this goes back to educating, motivating to get agents to accept the offer.
Right. Right.
So what are some of the common things that you're hearing? I mean, are you even hearing why offers shouldn't be accepted because it's VA? Is that still a thing out there?
You know, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but, statistically, most real estate agents are, it seems, in their 50s and 60s, age-wise, right? Maybe a lot of them. I mean, we got some much younger agents doing phenomenal, right? But we see a lot of agents in their 50s and 60s, and perhaps they had another career, and that ended, now they're doing real estate. And the VA that they remember... Right, it is another animal. I would argue that the VA loan program's gotten modernized in recent years, right? It's a lot more efficient. Yep. It's caught up with automation. I mean, right? We could pull an eligibility certificate today in a few seconds. And if I have the income documents from that service member, I can probably issue a bona fide pre-approval in an hour or two. Right. And then once they find a home, you could close that deal in 14 days or less sometimes, so that's not what they were accustomed to 25 years ago. And I feel like as a result, they carry that stigma with them. And it's hard to, break through that belief system.
Yeah, that is absolutely a true statement, because like I said earlier, they get that one. They remember that one bad situation. Right. And they just, that's all they think about. Just like us, when we figure out one guideline, the bulb goes on, like, oh my God, I didn't know I could do that. I'm going to remember that guideline for as long as I live.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's the same situation from a VA perspective for an agent. So you mentioned getting things done very quickly on the VA home loan. That's changed too with all the automation that you mentioned. So typically, it's about 15 days, maybe sooner.
If that service member veteran
has their stuff together, right?
Writing some allergies here. If they have their stuff together, right, and present it to you and everything, there's no reason that you can't close a deal in 15, 16, 17 days. Obviously, the bottleneck that you can't really control is the VA appraisal. Depending on the region that you're in, like we're out here in California, the appraiser is given 10 days to complete the report. So other than that, there's no reason a deal can't close in a couple of weeks, 20 days even.
That's pretty normal for us.
It has
been. We've had this poor veteran. I'll give you a quick story. This guy, we were supposed to close his loan February 26th. And he was selling his house under contract. Everything's moving right along. We get our clear to close in, 15 or 16 days. House still hasn't closed on what he's selling. So we extend. Come to find out that this particular buyer's having some struggles getting the final clear to close. And a month goes by, still haven't closed. So, fortunately for this customer. Mm-hmm. He's got some liquidable assets. So he was able to liquidate some assets, pay off what needed to be paid off instead of that house selling. Yeah. And he's closing next week, so he doesn't lose that house. So we doubled the VACTC, you know, still in about 20 days, total days, doing it twice. Yeah. But, you know, from what we move and how we move it quickly, it just happens quick.
It does. Yeah.
Just have to have that faith with the listing agent that, hey, we're getting it done. We know what we're doing. We're going to get that clear to close to you.
Right.
Now, you mentioned appraisal turn times. I've noticed a lot of success that you've had with reconsideration of value. Can you talk a little bit about that process and how successful you've been with that?
We've had good success, and not just us. I mean, the statistic from the VA, I think it was last year, John Bell III at the VA had put it out officially that I think 60-something percent, I wish I knew that statistic, of ROVs were successfully, you know, the value was overturned. And so we're right there. I think our percentage is a little bit higher. So just for anyone that's watching that's not familiar with the ROV, what it is, VA appraisal value comes in. The appraiser, you know, completes the value. Perhaps the value is lower than what purchase contract calls for. As long as the veteran is in agreement to contest that value, right, the veteran has to sign requesting the value increase, and you have to ask for a specific value. So if the house is in contract for $400,000, appraisal comes in at $380,000, right? You don't just send an ROV to the VA saying, hey, we want you to increase this value, right? It's too vague. The VA wants you to put a specific number. Well, the veteran might say, well, you know what? I feel like it's worth at least $392 or whatever. And you ask for that specific value. And then, of course, you want to support your argument with data. The appraiser, the way that we approach it is, are there inconsistencies in the appraiser's report? We find those inconsistencies and we point them out to the VA. And then second aspect of it is finding data that the appraiser, for whatever reason, did not use, right? So there's two different sides to this approach. One is you look at the appraisal and you challenge what you see in there based on inconsistencies, errors of judgment, typo errors or whatever. And then you bring in other data that the appraiser may not have used, and he presents the VA, say, look, here's a solid argument why this home is worth $392.
And where are you getting that data? Is the data coming from the agent representing him, or are you doing that on your own? What's the process there?
Mostly from the real estate agent that has access to all the, you know, close data and MLS and what have you. Once in a while, you know, this is a little extreme, I will pick up the phone and I'll call the agent on the sales that are listed in the appraiser's report as comparables. Mm-hmm. Ask that agent, hey, you know, you don't know me from Adam. We're not in a deal together, but hey, I have an appraisal where your closed sale was listed as a comparable. Was there anything unusual about that sale? And they're like, wow, that's an unusual question. And Rich, I can't tell you the kinds of stuff that I've heard. I heard one time from an agent, well, it was a distressed sale. The couple's baby died in the home. They couldn't stay there any longer. They had to leave, and they just sold it. I cut my commission. They just up and left. Well, that's not a normal sale,
right?
Right. So was that? Could we argue that's not a comp that should be really used? There was another one I remember where the agent told me, "Well, the only thing about the house is when you open the front door, you're facing a cemetery." So you learn these things by calling the agents on those sales. And I put that in my narrative to the VA. Look, this sale, this is a little, you know, there's some better sales, right? Because these two have issues. And you'd be amazed, you know, if the person on the other end is open-minded, they're going to give some credence to that.
At the end of the day, when you found that information out, did they just replace the comp? I mean, what happened? What was the result of that?
They adjusted the value. They used other comps. I mean, I'm not sure the exact math behind it,
right?
But we basically were able to take the attention away from certain comps and put them on other comps that supported the value. Now, this is a two-sided game, though, because sometimes the veteran says, well, it appraised for $380, I'm not paying any more, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't go asking for an ROV when the veteran's not in agreement with it, right? I mean, he or she has
to write a letter. That's why you need a letter from the veteran, right, on what he thinks it's worth.
He has to sign off on it.
Uh-huh. Do you run into that a lot?
I have. Oh, absolutely. I've had veterans say, well, I'm not going to fuss with an ROV. I'm out of here. If the seller doesn't drop the price, I'm gone. And they're well within their right to do so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the ROV, just for folks that are listening, the ROV comes after the Tidewater's been issued. So the Tidewater is the notification to the person who placed the order that we're not getting there. We need X, Y, and Z comps from the listing agent in, 48 hours, right? 2 days?
Yeah, 48 hours to the point of contact. Yeah.
Now, I've never really ran into this situation, but if a real estate agent does not reply to the Tidewater request and they just send that in, can we still do the ROV?
Yes, 100%. 100%. Okay. And a lot of people don't know this, but there's actually a little mini sub-step before we resort to an ROV. The underwriter, who's also known as the SAR, right, staff appraisal reviewer, has that level of authority, can reach out to the appraiser and say, hey, can we discuss this value? Can you consider this comp or that comp? Or why did you give, credence to this and not to that? There can be that dialogue. But I have found historically, underwriters are super busy. They have lots of files. And I don't want to lean on that, right? So as soon as that value comes in low, I'm on the phone with the veteran. Hey, you want to go through with this? Do you want to contest it? You still want to buy the house at, $400,000? And they're like, yeah, okay, we're going to put together an ROV. And then we set about getting the data from the agents, have the veteran sign off on it, and we go to the VA.
Do you find that being more of a challenge on a manual underwrite?
No, because I feel like the value of the appraisal should be looked at distinctly as a separate issue. With manual underwriting, I mean, that's just the veteran's creditworthiness and qualifying, right? Value is a separate issue.
Uh-huh. So I know we talked a little bit about the manual underwrite already and some of the stories that you gave us, but what is your best practice of, what is your initial conversation? With our experience, we know if it's going to be a manual underwrite or not. Sometimes we got to run the automation. It's going to tell us, it doesn't take, but we can do a manual. Right. What are some of the steps that you take as a loan originator once you know or get that automation where we have to do a manual? Is there a process that you go with the client? Yes.
It's more of a mindset, but there is a sequence of steps. So you might get a automated, no or a maybe, right? It's really not a no, it's a maybe because it's a refer eligible. That's the verbiage that you get back. Well, you can get that for two reasons. Number one, credit's great. Everything's good. There's money in the bank, but the system feels like the veteran's residual income, which is separate to debt to income ratio. We're not going to get into that, I don't think, right now. But the ratios the system algorithm is not comfortable with, right? The risk algorithm is not. So there's a manual underwrite because of ratios or residual income. But then a whole other reason is credit, right? That's another reason for manual underwriting. You got poor credit history. And so that's where I feel like we can shine. First thing I do is I pull up the credit report. I'll get the veteran on the phone. And of course, when I say veteran, I'm talking about active duty and National Guard and reservists and everybody else, right? I say, hey, tell me what happened here. And I dig deep. I do not let him off the hook. I said, I need you to tell me everything. Go through every single item, every single late payment. And I'm looking for a chronological order or chronological timeline. Because, I might look at a credit book and go, hey, you know what? He was paying everything great up until June of 2022. And then between June 2022 and, May 2023, he messed up. I was asking him, hey, what was going on in your life? What happened in June 2022? Right? Oh, I went through a divorce. Oh, I was out in field training and I didn't have internet access for 2 months or whatever. you know, I've had people say I had a loss in the family. I mean, whatever the reason is, you want to look for a pattern. If you see that this person is indiscriminately late on everything every time, you probably don't have a loan, right? So yeah. I'm looking for a pattern. I'm looking for them to tell me what happened, why it happened, and why is it unlikely to happen again? Tell okay. me, what did you do to change things? And I do take that, and I'll put something together myself, blend it with, you know, a televeter, and hey, if you feel comfortable with this narrative, please sign it. And then we go into underwriting.
You go into the battle. You go into the verbal battle with the underwriter.
We pray.
You turn on the lawyer hat, I like to call it.
You really do, because if you really think about it, you're really acting like a lawyer at that point. You're defending this person's actions. I mean, did you shoot her or did you stab her? What did you do? I mean, that's the conversation we're having. And Rich, I'll tell you, I'm convinced, because if you think about it, the underwriter is making a judgment call. Right. If you yeah. could be that good lawyer type of person to persuade her based on all of these good points, then you're being a darn good lawyer.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're getting stuff, but you're getting stuff approved that may not have a whole, you know, maybe one or two compensating factors. I mean, there may not be a whole yeah. lot of compensating factors for that.
And you're going to laugh at me, but I'll call the underwriter back a year later, or 2 years later, and say, hey, I'm going to bring up the name of one of my favorite underwriters, Gloria. If she ever watched this, don't laugh at me, but I'll call her. Hey, Gloria, remember, you know, Tim, we did that really tough VA loan and you were nervous, you know, you're nervous, Nelly. And guess what? He's paid his loan on time for 2 years. I'm about to do an Earl. I just want to let you know. Thank you. You know, I've done that so many times. Like, hey, it worked out, right? They didn't mess up. So.
Well, they got to be, I mean, you know, they've got to be mindful of what they're approving too, because they got to keep the DE underwriter approval. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, once you get that relationship with the underwriter, it sometimes mm-hmm. makes those conversations a little bit easier, right? Because they know who they're dealing with. With you.
Right.
You know, you're putting the file together properly. Yeah.
Yeah. And quite, sorry to interrupt, but you have to believe in the file. You're not going to sell a file. By that, I mean, you're not going to persuade an underwriter or something that you and your gut don't believe in. And I've been there where I'm like, you know what? This guy is not a good risk. This is not a good situation. And then I'm being pushed, you know, to get it done. And I'm like, oh man, we need to back away from this and pay off some bills, or, you know, give some more time for stability to develop. But there's other times I'm like, I believe this is a good loan. We need to get this done. And then the gloves come off and we go to fight, because I believe in my heart, this veteran deserves to be approved, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when you have the most success, because the underwriter picks up on that confidence, and confidence is contagious. So.
Absolutely. And when they see, you know, underwriter sees the skins on the wall. I mean, we've got some skins on the wall. They would be in agreement with, I think I know, or he knows what he's doing. He's got to put together. He's got to put it together correctly. So when you have when you have a manual underwrite that doesn't go your way, are we putting that veteran into a position maybe 3-6 months down the road, or what's that look like?
Just had that happen in September. Had a veteran apply in September 2023. He was already in contract when he reached out to me. So it was a lot of pressure. I couldn't get it done. They had recent late payments that it just did not have a good reason for. And I kept asking him, what happened here? I just didn't pay. I couldn't come up with a good enough reason. There was a couple of two or three of those. And the underwriter's like, hey, these guys are just, you know, they're having some hardship, or they're just negligent. I actually shopped that VA loan with three underwriters, and all three of them shot me down. Here I am talking about my failures. Why? Because it's the reality of it. But guess what? I'm still in contact with that veteran, and I'm waiting for those late payments to become a year old.
Yeah.
And I'm making sure they got some money in the bank, they're paying the bills on time, and we will get it done. It just wasn't, you know, the first time around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's something too, that as what we do, wholesale side, we have the opportunity of talking to a handful of different lenders and different underwriters and getting their take on it too. So that's a good thing to know. So if I'm a veteran out there, what are some of my chances to get my loan approved? in terms of
what are your chances?
Uh-huh. Yeah, like if I mean, what are there certain things that I need to provide up front? Is there, you know, walk me through what exactly I, if I'm a veteran coming to you today, want to get approved today, what do I need to do?
Yeah, first thing I want to do is make sure that you're eligible, right? Just because you served, it doesn't mean you're eligible. So we got to pull your eligibility, your certificate of eligibility. That's based on two things: your character of service and your length of service. And different periods of time have different lengths of service. Right now, if you are active duty, because we're in wartime, we have been in wartime since August 2nd, 1990. So if you're in wartime and you're active duty for 90 days, you're good to go. I'm going to pull that eligibility certificate using your LES and your driver's license. Now, if you're a veteran that served and got out already, there's different rules for that. But I'm going to, the first thing I do is I'm going to pull your eligibility certificate and make sure that you are entitled to a VA loan.
Yeah.
Right? It's the first thing we do. And then an application online. I mean, Rich, that takes 5 minutes, right? You're going to put in your data on a secure, encrypted site so you can feel comfortable. That comes in electronically to us. We're going to go through it, make sure it's complete. We're looking at stuff like job gaps. We're looking at stuff like dependents. Did you put your dependents on there? How old are they? Has there been a change of job recently? Stuff that we might want to look into further. I am, if it's a veteran that got out, I'm always asking them, do you have any service-connected disability, yes or no? And if they don't, I ask them, why have you not filed? And sometimes they give me the dumbest reasons. I encourage, and then we pretty much run the file through. I don't know if I'm going into too much detail. Is this what you're asking?
This is perfect. This is perfect.
Yeah. So I'm looking, you know, I'm going to request your pertinent documents. If you're active duty, I want an LES. In certain states, if you're married, then we do have to look at your spouse's debt obligations too, whether your spouse is going on the loan or not, doesn't matter. And then we're going to put all this stuff together, you know, a couple of recent bank statements, your disability award letter, and we're going to run it through this automated system. You know what that is, Rich? Mm-hmm. You know, we call it DU. Or LP, and we're going to get a decision within 15 seconds, right?
Yep.
Now, we just got to make sure that what we input could be supported, right? I mean, I could go in and input whatever I want. A guy makes $1 million a day. Or the underwriter is going to, you know, substantiate. So, but hey, if we did our job right, that decision is worth its weight in gold. You can get in the car and go look for a home today. That's how fast everything can happen.
So if I'm a veteran or active duty member getting approved, just generally speaking, I want to sprint so I can jog to the finish line. So I'm going to get everything up front to my loan originator and get a full pre-approval, not a pre-qualification, but a pre-approval doing the automation so that my offer letter has a little more strength, so to speak, with that letter behind it.
Agreed. So, if I may add, I mean, these days sellers are trained by their agents, you know, listing agents, real estate agents, to absolutely, you know, vet and make sure, you know, that that buyer is really qualified, because they don't want to put the home in the market, tie it up for 2-3 weeks, only to find out, you know, kind of like what you just described happened on your the other end of your deal, you know, that that person can't qualify. And nobody wants that, right? It's a waste of time. And so, you know, that buyer could very well go through the Grand Inquisition and be looked at for, you know, their ability to buy. So we have to do a really good job, and we have to ask for stuff that might be awkward for you to go get, you know. And I need your divorce decree, right?
Yeah.
Bring that up. Yeah. I need your child support court order. How much are you paying? You know, I need a letter. You filed bankruptcy. Okay, what happened? I'm not judging you, but tell me what happened. Give me a letter of explanation. You're asking for all this stuff that's a little personal, but it's going to come up. So do you want to deal with it now, or do you want to run into trouble once you found, you know, the home of your dreams, and now things are going sideways because you didn't give me what I wanted?
Right. Makes sense. You have some customers that, you know, they'll give you a little sideways look while you keep asking me for stuff. But at the end of the day, you've got to describe the entire picture. The entire story from the application needs to be presented.
You know, and I'll let that from you, Rich. Everybody watching this man right here. I trained you know, him back in the 90s.
I will say, you know, as we are dinosaurs in this industry, I do appreciate the fact that everything that we did back in the day helped us be better loan officers today.
Yes.
I mean, we you know, handwrite the application. We have that hour conversation on the phone just to take a 3-page application that we're on the phone for an hour. We're getting the life story on that customer. And then, you know, we pull the credit and analyze the credit. And I mean, we did all that. We didn't have a system that would do that for us. So I think that helped us be who we are today as a loan originator, in my mind.
100%. 100%.
Now, one other thing I want to get your expertise on is this condo waiver. Can you tell everybody a little bit about that? Because you can, if the condo is not approved with VA, you can still get a waiver, correct?
It is possible, and it happens. Condominiums have to be approved, right? They have to be on the VA's approved list. And technically, unless the VA learns about some litigation that's going on or some lawsuit and could suspend an existing approval on a condominium complex, condo approvals really don't expire, right? There's no expiration date otherwise. So if you find a condo and that condominium's not on the VA approved list, first step is see if you can get it. Now, say you, it's probably not going to be you, the veteran, doing this, but the lender and or the real estate agent, you know, get with the HOA, get the pertinent documents the VA wants, such as the CCNRs and the budget financials and, you know, plat, all of that stuff. Present it to the VA. And I'll tell you, what used to take a few years ago, you know, 6 months, you can have it knocked down in less than 30 days. You can upload that to the VA, and the VA could approve that condominium complex, which that action benefits anybody that wants to buy in that community that's a veteran. Right? Not just you, that one veteran. Now, in some cases, the VA will not approve the condominium for whatever reason. Maybe the budget is messed up. Maybe there's some issues there. The veteran might say, well, I still want that unit, right? I'm willing to. So the VA will have the veteran sign a disclaimer, basically saying, you know, and then they'll send it to their attorneys in Washington, D.C., look at the whole thing, and the attorneys can come back and give the green light and say, yeah, that veteran can buy that one unit, right?
Okay.
And the lender would go along with it. So that one unit, you know, the whole complex is not approved, but that one unit is given a waiver so you can do a VA loan on it.
Okay, so the condo waiver is just that one particular unit being purchased by the veteran.
Correct.
Have you gone through that process on one loan yet?
We have not had any success with it. We've had success getting condominiums approved. We've also had issues where a condominium got turned down and the veteran didn't want to pursue it any further. But I've got colleagues and people that I work with that, absolutely have had that happen.
So when do you go through that process? When they're looking for properties, or when does that come up for you to go? Because it sounds like it's going to take a little bit of time for that to get approved.
It is a little bit of a scary. One of our junior loan officers had a situation a few months ago where he had mentioned to the agents and the buyer, the veteran, hey, I will go ahead and get this approved, and they opened escrow. I'm like, oh, that's a little scary.
Yeah.
And at the very end of it, when the approval process was still going on, the seller side issued a notice to perform, which, as you know, is like saying, hey, you got a couple, 2-3 days, else we're going to pull the plug on this escrow. And thank God, last minute, here comes the approval from the VA for the entire community. I feel like that's a dangerous game to play, but it happens. It happens all the time. And as long as you alert the seller, hey, you know what? This could take 45 days, you know, and it could come back tonight. That's a risk. If they're willing to take that risk, you could go forward and begin the loan approval process while that condominium's not even on the approved list.
So let me ask you this question then. So you got the listing agent who's selling this condo. They should know if it's FHA, VA approved, right? For that kind of financing, it should be on the listing. What?
50% of the time they don't. They should.
Really? Okay. Well, my question was going to be, what persuaded the listing agent to take the offer and let you go through that process?
I don't even know. I'd have to ask my guy. I was like, they're crazy. I wouldn't have done it. Now, I will tell you, flip that coin for a second. We're in a situation. And if realtor Al Provencio is watching this, we had a deal 4 years ago, young service member, and the listing agent, this is in San Diego, said, no, it's not VA approved. We're not going to take any VA offers. It's not approved. It's not approved. And this young man was about to go empty out his TSP to get the money down for a conventional condo, you know, loan, right?
Yeah.
And I'm driving home and I'm like, something didn't sit right with me. Or something's just bugging me. Just right here. I'm like, something's not right. So I come in the office the next day. I'm like, you know what? I pulled up that property profile, and I looked at all of the units in that surrounding community, and I found two units on the same community, because I'm looking at a plat map, I'm looking at a Google map, I'm like, that's the same community, right? Mm-hmm. Two condos, just two, that sold with a VA loan. One was in the year 2000, July, I'll never forget this because I teach about this in my class. In July 2000, and one was in 2015, I'm like, I know condo approvals don't expire. I'm like, how do these guys get the VA loan on these two condos, the same community? So I pull up the deeds of trust from public records, and I call VA in Phoenix, and I said, can you give me the condo ID for these two properties? And he did. And I went onto the VA website. Instead of putting in the name of the community, I put in the condo ID, and here pops up the approved community. And guess what? The knucklehead that had gotten that community approved many, 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 many years ago had got it approved under the name of the tract number.
Oh, my Lord.
And so how would anybody have found that, right? Here I'm looking for it under the name of the official condominium community. It was not even mentioned at all anywhere. And yet that condo, so I called the service. I said, hey, you put your money back. We're doing a VA loan. You're going to borrow 100%. I told the agent, hey, I'm not going to blame you for it. Maybe I should have, but this community is approved.
Yeah, VA. But you know what? You know what? 99% of the loan officers wouldn't have done that extra PI step. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Maybe. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. You just only got the condo ID because, you know, every condominium complex has a condo ID with the VA. I mean, that was just a tremendous success story. You know, this guy would have been paying mortgage insurance. He was active duty Marine down at Miramar. He would have been paying mortgage insurance on a conventional loan, 95%. Plus a higher interest rate, plus took money out of his TSP.
Yeah.
You know, it was just another expression of how much more beneficial the VA loan was for him, you know.
So, you know, I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. you remember a guideline that you came across on one of your loans you'll know forever? Well, I'm going to remember that process that you went through and cross-reference a condo,
cross-reference.
Find a condo and see what I can get on the ID, make sure it matches.
And I had the plat map open and I had a Google map. I'm like looking like this on my browser. I'm like, oh yeah, it's the same freaking thing.
That is incredible. That's a good story. You teach that in your class, you said?
I do. I don't remember the name of the committee. It was something Verde, it's like in Spanish word. You know, I pulled it up on Google. I still have the Google search on the PowerPoint because there's a classic example of do not always believe the listing agent because they may not have gone the extra mile to see if that community was VA approved. Same goes for FHA as well.
So is that mm-hmm. one of the first steps you do if you see a condo not approved with VA? Is that
always
like a new best practice now?
Yeah. I pull a property profile. I look for every unit in that community. You know, you can pull it up by the name, the street mm-hmm. and everything. And if I find one VA loan, we're going to go after it. Chances are communities, you know, VA approved.
That's a great mm-hmm. idea. Wow.
Yes, sir.
That's why you're the guy.
Hey, I'm fine.
You're the guy. So our last thing that I want to talk mm-hmm. about with you is the recent changes with NAR, you know, the commissions, this and that. It's been just a bunch of talk, a bunch of noise. We don't know what to hear, what to listen. But as a lender, how do you think this is going to affect our buyers that want to use the VA benefit and our first time home buyers when it comes to representation, commission? What do you think?
Two things I want to say, Rich. There's a lot of fear going, a lot of fear being spewed out right now. A lot of fear, a lot of negative reaction. My gut tells me it's going to be business as usual. Mm-hmm. The listing agents that represent the sellers, they're going to hold the key, and they should know that it's actually less work for them to have another agent bring the buyer, find the buyer, and bring the buyer. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so is a seller willing to pay for that? I don't feel like sellers should give in to the media hype and the media fear tactic and say, well, I shouldn't pay a buyer's agent commission, right? Because as I understand it, the prohibition right now is just that it can't be advertised in the multiple listing service, right?
Correct. It's not going anything away. You just can't tell them what you're going to pay.
Yeah, you just anything can be negotiated. I don't care what's in the MLS. If I'm a buyer's agent saying, well, I'm going to represent this veteran, I'm going to negotiate my commission to represent the veteran. But I also need to have expressed to the veteran in no uncertain terms my true value and how I am looking out for you in all kinds of ways, negotiations, inspections, timelines, what have you. You know, I am looking out for the veteran as a buyer's agent. And so I earn my keep. I earn my commission. And so I'm going to negotiate that into the contract, irrespective of what MLS allows the seller, the listing agent to do.
And I agree with that. My concern, I think, is will the seller pick and choose which offer based on what him or her doesn't want to pay on a commission to the buyer and agent because of the type of financing? I mean, if you work in seller concessions to pay the buyer's agent commission, you're capped on certain concessions based on the financing that you're doing.
Yeah, I hate you. Two things I want to add to this. I mean, I feel like that already happens anyway. Now, sellers, to some extent, will favor a conventional buyer, just like a cash buyer, right? Because they have stigmas about VA. And secondly, I think there is a chance the VA could modify its longstanding rule of veterans not being able to pay real estate commissions. That right. could change. I actually would be surprised if it did. And if it did, I think it would happen very slowly. I don't think they're going to move fast. But I do know that I'm convinced that the industry, and by that I mean the regulators, NAR, agents, sellers, lenders, that's the industry, right? I think we'll come together and figure out a way to put something in place that is not going to discriminate against our veterans and not going to put them in a worse spot. Level the playing field. I'm convinced that we all have enough of a motivation to do that, right? Because the worst thing that we could do as an industry is put the veteran to the back of the line. And I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we'll allow that to happen.
Yeah, I cross my fingers on it because right now, if come July, if nothing changes between now and then for the veteran and they come across a house that they have to pay the buying agent themselves, that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
From a lender, I don't know if we fill in the gap with a lender credit or what we can do to offset that. But from what I understand, compliance wise, you can't put that line item on the CD regardless of who's paying for it.
No, I mean, as it stands, the veteran cannot pay a real estate commission, right? It starts there. If that verbiage changes, then, you know, the whole thing becomes workable because, I'm speculating now what I'm about to say. Maybe if the veteran paid, you know, was charged that commission, could he or she then be reimbursed that or credited that amount through some other way, right? It's too early to say.
It's the speculation that's causing the chaos and the noise, right? I mean, it's
just... and I will tell you, the media is not helping, man. It's just like anything. The media just, you know, scaring sellers and telling sellers, oh, you know, you shouldn't be paying for buyer's agent commission anyways, you know? Buyer's agents play a bona fide necessary role in our industry protecting the buyer. And for that, they should be compensated.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw one TikTok last night or the other day where, you know, the buyer's bringing the money, they're bringing the funds to buy your house so you can pull that equity out, right? Without a qualified buyer, you're not getting that equity. You're not moving on. So it's a very important piece of the puzzle to still make sure everyone's compensated.
Makes sense.
You know, without the buyer, you don't have a seller.
No.
So
right on.
Well, it'll be interesting how it all shakes out. The conversations I've had with some are, you know, they're not concerned. Yeah. And then you've got some that are extremely concerned and they're setting out everything that they do for a buyer and this and that, which is true. You know, there's a lot goes into helping a buyer find a home, making offers and getting accepted inspections. There's a lot that goes into it. So, as a lender, I just want to feel where we can fill in the gap. What's the gap that's going to be needed for that?
Right. Good stuff.
Well,
good stuff.
Yeah. We're going to end on that.
Hey, man, great questions. Great dialogue. Thanks for having me on here. Very thought-provoking stuff. And it's great. We both have a passion for helping vets get into homes. And, you know, we both feel the same way. A lot of times they're left on the sidelines because someone's not willing to go the extra mile. And we both are, you know, committed to doing all it takes, right? And that's great. So
It's been a long road for both of us. I mean,
yeah.
From since what, 97, 96, 97?
Yeah. A
little gray hair, no hair.
I got like a little bit left under this hat. I'm not going to lift it, but there's a little bit going on there.
So if folks who are listening want to get a hold of you for a VA home loan, I know you're licensed in a ton of states right now, but for the most part, for people in your area, how can they get in touch with you to discuss VA?
Go to the site, maxvaloan.com. I'm there. Contact information is on there. Applications on there. Maxvaloan.com will be the best way.
Well, again, my name is Richard Serry with Alliance Mortgage Group. If you like our podcast, please share, forward, like, go out to our social media platforms and follow us there. If you want to get in touch with us, just go to our website, alliancemtggroup.net. All right, my friend. I hope the family's doing well. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, buddy.
You take care. Have a good day. God bless you. Bye.
If this episode has been beneficial, we'd love to hear from you. Please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, for regular updates and tips, make sure to follow our social media channels, which you can find in the show notes. Until our next episode, keep making homeownership dreams come true.